All right, strap in, everyone, because today we're going deep on a pretty amazing piece of tech, the V-22 Osprey.
Yeah, you know, that aircraft that can't seem to decide if it's a helicopter or a plane?
Exactly. It takes off straight up, like a chopper, but then it can fly long distances like a regular airplane. We've been digging through a ton of articles and interviews, talking to pilots and commanders who've flown this thing and really know it inside and out.
It's a fascinating story for sure. And we're going to get into all of it.
Oh, yeah. We're going to cover its development, its impact on military operations, and even what the future might hold for the world's first tiltrotor aircraft.
There's been a lot of talk about the Osprey's safety record over the years, and we'll definitely address that too.
But we're going beyond just the headlines. We're really going to get into the nitty-gritty of how this unique aircraft has evolved and what it brings to the table.
And trust me, there are some surprising twists and turns along the way. You'll be amazed by some of the things we uncovered.
Like, did you know that a flight with a U.S. senator might have actually changed the Osprey's fate with the Navy?
It's a wild story, and we'll get to that in a bit.
But first, let's rewind, go back to the beginning. You know, the Osprey's early days and how it all started. One of our key sources for this deep dive is Lieutenant General Retired Heckel, a Marine with a ton of experience flying the Osprey. He was actually involved in the program from its very early stages.
And that's what makes his perspective so valuable. He transitioned from the CH-46 helicopter to this brand new kind of aircraft. Talk about a learning curve.
I can't even imagine.
He described some of those early days, and it's clear that there were definitely some growing pains.
Yeah, there were some bumps along the road. But Heckel really highlights the hard work and dedication of everyone involved, especially the maintenance crews.
He was actually deployed to Iraq in 2008, and he describes the Osprey's performance there as spectacular. He really credits the maintenance crews with keeping those aircraft flying in some pretty tough conditions.
It's incredible how they kept those things going in the desert heat and dust.
And speaking of incredible, get this. Heckel actually piloted one of the Ospreys on a mission with then-Senator Obama. They flew all the way across Iraq and into Jordan in a single flight.
Wow, that's impressive, especially when you consider that the same mission would have taken multiple CH-46 helicopters, yeah, and 2 full days to complete.
Exactly. It really highlights the Osprey's range and fuel efficiency compared to traditional helicopters.
That flight with Senator Obama actually had some interesting consequences, too.
You see, that single Osprey flight really got people thinking.
Like, hey, maybe the Navy could use this thing, too.
Exactly. There were serious discussions about whether the Osprey's speed and range would be valuable for naval operations.
And that ultimately led to the Navy's decision to integrate the Osprey into its fleet. It's amazing how that one flight might have changed the course of the Osprey's history.
Yeah, talk about a butterfly effect. But let's get back to Heckel's experience in Iraq. He really emphasized the Osprey's unique survivability features.
Yeah, he talked about how they'd fly into dangerous areas at night using those night vision goggles, gradually spiraling down towards the landing zone.
And they do it with minimal power to reduce their heat and noise signature, basically making themselves as invisible as possible.
It's not just about withstanding an attack. It's about avoiding detection in the first place.
Exactly. Minimizing your exposure to threats. That's a key aspect of the Osprey's design philosophy.
Heckel also had the opportunity to command MAWTS-1, the Marine Aviation Weapons and Tactics Squadron 1.
Oh, wow. MAWTS. That's where the Marine Corps develops and refines its combat tactics. Pretty high-stakes stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And with the introduction of the Osprey, they had to figure out how to integrate this unique aircraft into their operations. It wasn't just a new aircraft, it was a whole new way of thinking about combat.
And then there's the Osprey's partnership with the KC-130J tanker aircraft. That really expands the operational reach of the Osprey even further.
It's like giving it wings.
Exactly. And Heckel is a big believer in that synergy. He even said that anyone talking about the Osprey needs to consider its partnership with the KC-130J. They're really a team.
So we talked about the Osprey's expanded operational capabilities, but what about the human element? What's it like to actually fly this thing?
You're right. You can have the most advanced technology in the world, but if the people operating it aren't up to snuff, it's not going to be very effective.
That's where Cowboy comes in. He's a seasoned Osprey pilot who's all about squadron readiness.
Yeah.
Having well-trained personnel, enough spare parts, and most importantly, enough flight hours to keep pilots sharp and ready for anything.
And that last one, the flight hours, is a bit of a concern, isn't it?
Yeah, there's been a trend of decreasing flight hours for Osprey pilots, and Cowboy is pretty vocal about the potential impact that could have on their skills and decision-making, especially when landing in challenging environments.
He makes a good point. I mean, think about it. If you're not getting enough time in the cockpit, your skills are going to get rusty.
He calls it muscle memory, that ability to react instinctively in tough situations. He uses the example of landing in dusty conditions, which can be really disorienting. He says that while simulators are great tools, nothing can really replace the real-world experience.
And he's got the experience to back that up. He said when he was a young pilot, he was flying over 300 hours a year. Now, the average Osprey pilot is only flying around 150 hours a year.
That's a pretty significant difference. So yeah, the human element is definitely something to consider.
Absolutely. And that leads us to another big topic, the Osprey safety record.
Now, this has been a subject of a lot of debate, and we want to address it head on. Remember a while back, the Air Force variant of the Osprey was grounded because of a safety incident.
Right, I remember that. It was a pretty big deal.
Well, they did a thorough investigation, made some maintenance changes, and updated some procedures. And after confirming that they had mitigated the risk, the Osprey was cleared to fly again.
NAVAIR, the Naval Air Systems Command, was very transparent about the whole process, too. They released a lot of information about the investigation and what they did to address the safety concerns.
Which is important. I mean, you have to be transparent about these things, especially when public safety is involved.
Absolutely. It's about maintaining trust and ensuring that the Osprey can continue to operate safely.
Now, even with those incidents, Major General retired Steve Busby, he argues that the Osprey often gets a bad rap, and that its safety record is actually comparable to other aircraft.
Busby has a unique perspective on this because he actually oversaw the transition from CH-46 helicopters to Ospreys in the Marine Corps.
Right, so he's seen firsthand how the Osprey has performed in real-world operations.
He even presented data comparing the Osprey's mishap rate to other Marine Corps aircraft, and it's not the best, but it's not the worst either. It falls right in the middle.
He was pretty passionate about the Osprey's capabilities in an article from 2012. Mm. He called it a game changer in the Pacific because of its speed, range, and ability to operate from ships or those rough landing zones they often encounter.
Yeah, and he said something that really stuck with me. He said that the Osprey gets the infantryman in the back, or whoever it is out of harm's way faster than anything else on the planet. That really sums up what the Osprey is all about.
And then there are those incredible stories from Captain Singh, another experienced Osprey pilot. He talked about rescuing a sailor with a serious medical condition, flying him over 1,100 nautical miles in just over 4 hours.
It's amazing to hear those real-world examples of how the Osprey is making a difference, not just in combat, but in humanitarian missions and disaster relief efforts as well.
So we've covered a lot of ground here, from the Osprey's early development and those operational experiences to its unique survivability features and the crucial role of pilot training. We've also touched on the debate surrounding its safety record and the strong arguments from those who've seen its capabilities firsthand.
But there's still more to explore. Next, we'll dig into how engineers are working to make the Osprey even more reliable and efficient, and we'll examine the modernization programs that are keeping this aircraft relevant in a world that's constantly changing. Now, shifting gears a bit, let's talk about keeping these Ospreys running, you know, sustainability and all that.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Where do we even begin with that? It's a pretty complex machine, right?
Absolutely. And one of the key things we look at is something called the mission capable rate, or MC rate for short.
MC rate. Okay. I'm not familiar with that. What is that exactly?
It's basically a snapshot of how ready the Osprey fleet is at any given moment. You know, how many of them are actually available to fly missions.
So a higher MC rate is obviously a good thing. It means more Ospreys are good to go when they're needed.
Exactly. And that's where the Nacelle Improvement Program, or NI program, comes in.
Okay, the NI program. Tell me more about that.
Well, one of our sources, David Albin, a former Air Force pilot who's now the Nacelle Readiness Program Manager at Bell, gave us some great insights.
Right, Albin. He seems to really know what he's talking about.
He does. And what's interesting is how they approached this whole NI program. They didn't just start redesigning parts willy-nilly. They took a very data-driven approach.
Oh, that's smart. So they looked at all the data from the Ospreys that were out there flying, seeing what was breaking down and what needed improvement.
Yeah, they wanted to understand what was causing the most headaches for the maintenance crews and how they could make the Osprey more reliable. They also talked to the maintainers themselves, you know, the guys who work on these things every day.
So they went right to the source, the folks who really know the Osprey inside and out.
Exactly. And they decided to focus on four key areas: building new nacelles, reusing more components, improving the wiring design, and strengthening some of the structural elements.
Sounds like a lot of technical work. But did it actually pay off? Did the NI program actually make the Osprey more sustainable?
The results are pretty impressive. The Air Force has been using the modified nacelles on their CV-22s, and they've seen a huge reduction in maintenance man hours.
How much of a reduction are we talking here?
Thousands of hours saved. It's incredible. That's a lot of time that maintainers can now spend on other important tasks.
Wow, that's a big win. And I'm assuming that means those Ospreys are spending more time in the air and less time in the hangar.
You got it. And get this, they haven't had a single component failure in the modified aircraft.
Zero failures.
Really?
Not one. It's amazing considering they were expecting hundreds of failures with the old design.
Talk about exceeding expectations.
It's a testament to the NI program and the whole data-driven approach they took. It's a huge step forward for sustainability.
Absolutely. So, we've got sustainability covered. But what about the future? How do you keep an aircraft like the Osprey relevant when technology is constantly evolving?
Well, Colonel Brian Taylor, who's the V-22 program manager at NAVAIR, has been pretty clear about the need to modernize the Osprey.
What are some of the key areas they're focusing on?
One of the big ones is standardizing the configurations across the different branches of the military.
Wait, they're not already standardized. Why not? Well, each service kind of adapted the Osprey to their own specific needs over the years, which led to some variations in the aircraft setup.
Okay, I see. But that must create a lot of logistical headaches.
It does. It makes it harder to manage spare parts and roll out upgrades efficiently. Colonel Taylor wants to move to a standard configuration across the board so things are more streamlined.
Yeah, it's like, why reinvent the wheel three different times?
Exactly. And the other big push is on the cockpit. Colonel Taylor made a great analogy. He said it's like an old car with all these screens and displays that were designed back in the 80s. They're getting harder and harder to maintain.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's like trying to find parts for a vintage computer.
Exactly. So they're finally giving the Osprey cockpit a much-needed makeover.
That's got to be a welcome change for the pilots.
It is. The program is called V-22 Cockpit Technology Replacement, or VECTOR for short. It's all about bringing modern, commercially available technologies into the cockpit. You know, like touchscreen displays, better navigation systems, maybe even voice control.
It's like upgrading from a rotary phone to a smartphone.
Exactly. And they're also pushing for open system architecture, or OSA, which is about making the Osprey more adaptable to future upgrades and technologies.
So future-proofing the Osprey, essentially.
Right. OSA makes it easier to integrate new systems and capabilities as they become available, so the Osprey can keep up with the evolving threats and mission requirements.
That's smart. So what else are they working on? Any other cool upgrades in the pipeline?
Oh, there's a bunch. One that I thought was really cool is the Osprey Drive System Safety and Health Instrumentation. It uses vibration sensors to detect problems with components before they actually fail.
Wow, that's like having a crystal ball for your aircraft.
Pretty much. And they're also redesigning a key part of the protoboard gearbox to make it even more reliable.
It sounds like they're really pulling out all the stops to keep the Osprey flying for years to come.
They are, and it's paying off. The Osprey has come a long way since its early days, and it's clear that it's going to continue to play a vital role in military operations for the foreseeable future.
So we've talked a lot about the V-22 Osprey, its history, its capabilities, and how it's being improved and modernized. But now I want to step back and think about the bigger picture. You know, what does the Osprey mean for the future of aviation?
It's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, the Osprey is more than just an aircraft. It's a completely new type of aircraft. The tiltrotor, it combines the best of both worlds, vertical takeoff and landing of a helicopter, but with the speed and range of an airplane.
It's a game changer. It's not just a concept anymore either. The Osprey has proven that this technology works. And it's definitely inspiring some new thinking in aviation.
Oh, absolutely. We're already seeing new tiltrotor aircraft being developed, like the Bell V-280 Valor. That one's being considered for the U.S. Army's future long-range assault aircraft program.
So the Osprey is paving the way for a whole new generation of aircraft.
Exactly. And it's not just limited to military applications either. There's a lot of interest in using tiltrotor technology for civilian purposes, too.
Oh, yeah. Imagine a world where you can just skip those traffic jams in crowded airports.
Think about it. You could take off and land vertically from rooftops or small landing pads right in the heart of cities.
It's like something out of a science fiction movie. Flying cars.
Well, maybe not flying cars exactly, but tiltrotor aircraft could revolutionize how we travel, especially within and between cities. faster, more efficient, and definitely more sustainable.
It could change everything, from how we commute to work, to how goods are transported, even how emergency services respond to situations.
Imagine tilt-rotor ambulances zipping through the sky to get to accident scenes faster, or air taxis hopping between buildings, packages delivered right to your doorstep, no more waiting for the delivery truck.
The possibilities are mind-blowing.
It's a pretty exciting prospect. Tilt-rotor aircraft could also be a game-changer for search and rescue operations, disaster relief efforts, even environmental monitoring in those hard-to-reach places.
So the Osprey's impact could go way beyond its current military role. It could be the start of a whole new era of aviation.
It's a fascinating possibility. The Osprey, it's a testament to the power of innovation. It's changed how we think about flight, and it's clear that its story is far from over.
Well, listeners, that wraps up our deep dive into the V-22 Osprey. We've covered a lot of ground, from its humble beginnings to its role in shaping the future of aviation. We've talked about its capabilities, its challenges, its safety record, the ongoing efforts to make it better and more sustainable. I hope you've gained a new appreciation for this truly remarkable aircraft.
The Osprey story is a story of constant evolution, pushing boundaries, overcoming obstacles, and adapting to the ever-changing world. It's a story that's still being written.
And if you're as intrigued by the Osprey as we are, we encourage you to explore further, you know, dig into the sources we've used, ask questions, and who knows, maybe you'll even be inspired to contribute to the next chapter of the Osprey story. The future of aviation is wide open, and the Osprey is leading the way.